Ready?
Let the meeting come to order, if you will, at 12:36. Sorry we're late. Please join me in the Pledge of Allegiance.
Ready? Go.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Let the record show we do have a quorum. We have two directors missing in action. There's a schedule conflict with Director Barringer, and Merle Clift has a personal problem that prevents him from attending today. I would say that several days ago it was going to rain, but I think Mother Nature realized we had a board meeting, so the sun's out again. So good news from that. Report from closed session.
First of all, thank you for putting me on the agenda, and thanks to Kathy for reminding me that your meeting in November is early. I've been here every year since we started the Needs and Wishes fundraiser in Los Osos for the shelter. It's a countywide event. This is the seventh year. At some point this year, we will have raised over $250,000 for the shelter. The event is December 8th at the Community Center in Los Osos, right after the Christmas parade. It goes from approximately 10 o'clock in the morning till around 7 at night. We have a silent auction. Last year we had over 450 items on the silent auction. We have a toy store where you can come and buy new toys at below retail price. We have also have a barrel for Toys for Tots and Operation Santa Claus at the toy store. So if you want to come and buy a toy and drop it in one of those, we get the money for the purchase of the toy. They get the toy. It's double the bang for the buck. We have a fabulous bake sale this year. There's over 50 participants baking for it this year, plus Slow Bake Bakery is providing their pies as they do every year. Last year they provided over 70 pies. They were delivered before we opened and they were all gone by 12 o'clock. We also have a gift certificate table where you can buy gift certificates from restaurants all over the county. Your community has been very generous in the past donating items for the silent auction and the gift certificate table. We also have a food concession, variety of things, but the staples are hamburgers, hot dogs, veggie burgers, free cookies, hot cocoa, sodas, things like that. There's entertainment all day. We have children's choirs from the area that perform, dance groups, soloists, pianists. Let's see, what am I missing? Oh, we also have a coin collection. That's one of the other reasons I'm here. To promote your high school's Interact Club, and very much appreciated. You know, we can learn a lot from our children. It's kind of heartwarming to see them out there and putting in the effort. We also have a raffle, and we have a couple surprises this year for those that haven't come before, so you'll have to come and see what those are. I'm not going to take up a lot of your time today. You know about the event. And if you can't make the event, there they go. If you could send a check made out to either Maxine Lewis Memorial Shelter or Transitional Food and Shelter to P.O. Box 6721 Los Osos 93412. One change that we've made this year, Part of the proceeds from the event will be going to assist Transitional Food and Shelter, which is an organization in the county that assists the homeless when they leave the hospital and have no place to go. They have a voucher program for the hotels. It's a countywide organization. They also have a number of apartments that they're in control of to help people recover, so they're not recovering in their car or on somebody's couch or, you know, in a tent. As all organizations are hurting this year, they were in dire need of some additional help, so our core group decided that they were deserving of part of the proceeds this year, so they will also benefit from the event. That's all I have for you as far as the event, but since I have a couple other minutes, a couple more minutes, I've written something on about the homeless situation in the county that I'd like to read. And I just want to remind you, I think I've said this before, our fundraiser has no overhead. Every penny from the event goes to the charity. We have nobody that's being paid. We have nobody that's receiving the salary or ever has received a salary for their advocacy of for the homeless in this county. So I'm reading this as someone that has really no tie that anybody can pull a string on. This past year, there seems to be more advocacy against our homeless population than for it. Remember, every homeless person is or was somebody's loving son, daughter, brother, sister, mother, father, aunt, uncle, friend, or neighbor. They are not lepers to be shunned by a civilized society, not to be acknowledged as even existing, as we glance away to avoid eye contact while passing each other on the sidewalks in this county, not to be isolated from the mainstream and sequestered some in some far-off nether region of the county. Don't our homeless veterans deserve the same level of safety and comfort as those of us they protected from harm's way have enjoyed and so often take for granted? These are our true heroes, and we should honor their sacrifice properly. 60,000 homeless veterans nationwide. One is too many. And children, because they are children, should never have to endure the trials and tribulations of being homeless, period. And until we are able to provide far-reaching comprehensive services for the large segment of our homeless population suffering with mental health issues, shame on us, not them. We build architectural marvels to honor and perpetuate the arts, and modern museums to protect our heritage. Yet our homeless shelters are not on par with the condition of our animal shelters. To me, this speaks volumes to our current level of commitment to assist those of least means among us. So when we give thanks 1 week from today, let us also reflect on where we are and where we should be with respect to addressing this complex issue. Remember, there by the grace of God go I. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. Questions? No. Thanks again. Oh, do you?
Yes.
Director Robinette?
I just had a couple of questions. Not really questions, observations. First of all, I thank you for your very well-spoken presentation and sharing. I think you talk about something that touches everyone in some way. You have then tomorrow a fundraiser with the high school will be at the farmers market?
Almost $2,000 in coins.
Wow.
In a 3.5 week period. I mean, it's amazing.
Yeah, that's great. And these are in the 5 gallon jugs?
They're using 5 gallon jugs. They also have this year, and I don't know where they're going to set them up, but have you ever seen those little containers that they sell at like Rite Aid where you put the coin in and it counts it as it goes? They've got those. They've got 12 of those, and I don't know what they're going to do with them this year.
But it'd be kind of fun to have the kids estimate actually how much does 5 gallons of coins weigh.
Oh,
that's a lot.
The first year when they started doing this and they had no idea how much one of those would weigh, they did it in a 5-gallon jug and they had to wheel it in on a dolly.
Right, that's what I thought. That's pretty interesting.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Pretty heavy stuff.
Thank you.
Thanks again. Before a public comment, I think it's worthy of making note that we do have a new board director. Amanda Rice will be joining the board, and congratulations to her as well as Director Robinette, incumbent, and Merle Clift. I know it'll be a great board. With that, first in public comment, Tom Martin.
My name is Tom Martin, and I'm wearing my Cold Canyon landfill hat today. I need your help. As strange as it may sound, we are appealing the approval of our own project. And basically it's because some of the mitigations as the Planning Commission came up, which are entirely discretionary, are causing some heartburn in terms of the way rates will end up. And if you look at the little sheet I passed out to you, of the $4.92, the way that it sits right now, $1.20 of it is to dig the landfill hole and the liners and those kind of things. $1.93 of it is the CEQA process mitigations and the air board and the water board requirements that much like water systems, you know, you have to do. But there are some things in there that are entirely discretionary. And what I'm asking you to do is, if you have any influence with the Board of Supervisor from this area, Mr. Gibson, I would encourage you to call him and exercise that discretionary power to keep the rates as low as possible. Because as you can see from the presentation, that over the next 8 years, the landfill rate is going to be going up. And it can go up as high as $78.53, or it can go up as high as $62.40 discretionary powers and reduce that. But we certainly can use any help you can give us. And to give you an example of two of the things that are causing the major grief, we originally collected 1 mile on either side of the entrance to the landfill. The Planning Commission decided that it should be 12 miles. And so that's going to require the hiring of 2 bodies and 2 pickup trucks and 24/7 worth of policing of 12 miles worth of roadway. And while we understand that the landfill is part of the problem in creating the litter, there's litter in front of my house in Napomo, but I certainly don't think the landfill needs to come down there and pick it up. So that's one of the major expenses. The other one is they've asked us to street sweep on a daily basis the entire asphalt property that the landfill is on. Currently, we have somebody come in 1 or 2 days a week, kind of depending on the time of year. And if Caltrans calls us and says there's too much track out getting out on Highway 227, then we have them come in and do some extra work to make it clean. But they are requiring us to do it every day, 8 hours a day, which requires us buying a street sweeper, hiring an employee, and again, doing something that maybe not necessarily be needed that we are currently doing that seems to be okay. It's just they went the extra mile on this requirement. So that gives you some idea of the things that we're after them to change. And we certainly would appreciate any juice you have with Supervisor Gibson. Thank you.
Tom, I have a question with respect to, like, for instance, the 2 miles versus 12 miles of cleanup. Is there any rationale other than just simply it's a good number, nice number?
Well, one of the complaints that came out in the Planning Commission process was that the Highway 227 and Price Canyon Road, yeah, and then Corbett Canyon going back the other way are kind of the 3 main roads of people that travel to the landfill. We have a requirement that you tarp your load.
Sure.
And there are fines if you litter on the highway. However, there is still some stuff that blows around, and the Planning Commission just felt that we should do, you know, 4 miles on each of those roads instead of the 1 mile either side of the landfill. Mm. We are asking that the Board of Supervisors cut that back to an on-call basis. Like if somebody drives by the wayside and tosses a bag off the side of the road, renegade dumping is what we call it, we currently go out and pick that up. And that's what we'd like them to stick with. Because to police the roads for the 6 days a week that we're open, 8 hours a day, it's a monumental task. And it's an expensive task. No. That's why we're going to the board.
Director Robinette.
Thanks.
That reminds me of that statement I made here once before from our good friend Thomas Jefferson, right? The greatest threat to the general well-being of the public is the concentration of power, whether it be in private or government agencies. And just year after year, they just pile it on. And it really comes back to us, the ratepayers, the taxpayers, to pick up the tab. Unbelievable. Well, I wish you the best of luck. And if there is any power we have, I look to our GM. That's the only one that has the clout. But makes sense. We should object to it for sure. That being said, Mahalia Burton. Pros minutes. How's this? Tell me one last time. My last shot.
Mahalia Burton.
Mahalia.
It's actually Gaelic.
Well,
there's lots of
we're
people.
Probably related.
We're all related if
yes.
we go back far
well,
enough.
Gaelic.
That's
for sure.
Some people might not like that idea.
Okay.
I just have three quick items. Pros. A lot of issues keep coming up about pros. Each meeting, even if I don't attend, I watch at home very carefully. I record it, probably watch it and listen more carefully than when I'm here. I was wondering if the pros minutes could be set out on the table, because the only way to get the minutes is to do a public document request. And last month, it was brought up that the dog park is got some bids on paving 1,000 feet of Rodeo Road. Well, I mean, that's just put out there, and then it's dangling. Director Berenger, the month before, brought up, oh, why don't we go out and start grading the fields? You know, maybe that's just something he was saying. However, if these things are being discussed in detail in PROS, I think that it'd be nice if we could just put the minutes out on the table. I've asked that they be posted along with the agenda, which is posted on the website, but Kathy has got enough work to do. Okay, secondly, Elizabeth sent me an email today to brought my attention to a legal notice in the Tribune, which I looked up. There's going to be a house with... Last thing is that last month, Merle Cliff, in discussing the retrofit points, he kind of made this silly grin and said, well, we should have be sure that the wait list gets those retrofit points, not these people that are going to be converting over, meaning the Brambles, 2 bathrooms to 20. So he was insinuating that we should have 2 classes of people for the retrofit points. So I just looked up the Equal Protection Clause, and I'm to make sure that that would apply, that this is a form of a state government. We use the government code. Equal Protection Clause apply, that you can't start discriminating against somebody that wants to build a commercial property, even if it's a remodel, and people on the wait list. That's discrimination. And not that I want any building, but I thought that that was a little strange for a director to say something like that. And congratulations to your win. Thank you.
Mary Webb.
Hi, Board, Mary Webb, Cambria. Just wanted to let you know I got back from Santa Monica last night, where the California Coastal Commission unanimously denied the seismic testing that was going to take place outside on our coast. So I just wanted to thank you so much. It's just such a great win, and that the CCSD joined their voices with San Simeon CSD, Morro Bay City Council, Los Osos CSD, Avila Beach CSD, the SLO County Board of Supervisors, Monterey City Council, Surfrider, the Otter Project, Green Space, the Cambria Fishing Club, 2 different commercial fishing organizations, NRDC, the Ocean Conservancy, and local groups, including the Stop the Diablo Canyon Testing Group and the Coast local group. So the California Coastal Commission reiterated that their reasons for denying that project were that the tests were not mandated by any agency, by any law. So anything in the paper to the contrary is absolutely false. They were never mandated to do 3D seismic testing. The tests do not make us safer and in no way make the plant safer. They cannot predict an earthquake by doing those tests. All the tests would do was harm the marine life. So the irreparable harm, and they illustrated the irreparable harm and possible death to marine mammals and wildlife, and they think even that the low-intensity testing that has been done last year and the year before that did not get any kind of permitting, the positive use of regulations and of the Coastal Act, which is, we are so lucky to have the Coastal Act. These are carefully crafted regulations that are here to protect us, protect our wildlife, protect the future generations of our kids and grandkids to be able to go out there and enjoy the beauty of the ocean, for tourists alike from all over the world to come and enjoy this beautiful place we call home. So this was also, I guess a week ago, was the 40-year anniversary of the Coastal Act and the development of the California Coastal Commission, so it was a really wonderful win. So I wanted to thank you so much for your letter.
Thanks. Thank you, Mary. Okay, with that, item number 5, agenda review. Any additions, deletions? Any on the pulled consent items? While you're checking your notes, I have only one question rather than pull anything, and it's regarding consent 7A. I wonder, General Manager, there's just a simple explanation. On page 33, there's an item, as I recall. 5,200 for the wastewater landscape improvement project by a Mercado Gardening and Hall. What is that all about?
If you noticed out in front of the wastewater treatment plant now, there was a beautification project that was taken on, and it's
Windsor.
It's the whole front of the wastewater plant was landscaped, and really adds to that whole corridor, I think. And part of the budget process, we did put money aside for landscaping and things like that, and that mm-hmm. was part of that project. So
no, I missed that.
But it looks really nice. I mean, mm-hmm. I think, because of Shamo Park being right there, because of Moonstone and the wastewater treatment plant being close to a residential area, Park Hill, we decided to get it done, and I think it really adds to the overall.
Is that going to be maintained by the wastewater folks? Or
yeah, it'll be maintained by the wastewater folks, but the way we designed it and the way we implemented it is very low maintenance, and it doesn't require a lot of work.
Excellent. Thank you. That answers it.
Any manager's report is the Facilities and Resource Department manager's report. You can again see that they're doing a lot of work out in the community, making a lot of improvements to our facilities. The wastewater supervisor's report, you can see that Mike and his staff have been very, very busy making improvements to the community's infrastructure. There's Jim Adams's report on the water side. Again, a lot of maintenance and things are getting done, and as you can see, financially we're still doing well. Our reserves are strong, and overall our budget's doing well. We are July, August, September, October. We're 4 months into it, and looks like we're financially doing pretty good overall. If there's any questions that I can answer at this time, just on another note, we do have a closed session phone call with Bill Avery, our labor negotiator, at 4 o'clock. If we could make that, that would be great. But if there's any questions I can answer about my general manager's report or any of the department manager's reports, I'd be more than happy to do that at this time.
Dr. Thompson?
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. Gruber, I noticed here on your second bullet you commented upon the decision that the executive committee made to not go forward at this point with another agreement with the lobbyists in Washington. We felt that it was something that was not necessarily going to be worthwhile until we really see which way the wind is blowing in D.C. I did note, however, in the county supervisor's agenda that they have an agreement with the Ferguson Group, lobbyists in Washington, for $12,000 for countywide lobbying services. And perhaps we could communicate with Supervisor Gibson about having that group as part of our one-fifth share of the $72,000, have that group do some exploration in Washington with respect to whether or not there would be some funds forthcoming or whether we can move on any of our own agenda there.
Thank you, Vice President Thompson. I've worked with the Ferguson Group before. I've worked with the Furman Group before. Ferguson Group is a good lobbyist group. There is some activity relating to WERDA that's happening right now, and I'll make contact with the county, and hopefully they can put me in contact with somebody.
At the list of all the different agencies in California that are slated for funding, and so I'm just I just think, for me, I'm still uneasy because I believe time is of the essence, and I know perhaps a lobbyist is a way to have entree, but we do have Lois Capps just elected again. We do have Senator Feinstein, and I believe she's the one that had the whole list in the first place. And so I can't overemphasize that I would just like to have some information on the current WERDA bill that's seemingly being activated or is being considered. I really would like if we could find out what are the timelines, because I don't want us to miss the boat. And while we're in the process of thinking about a lobbyist to represent us, I don't have qualms about that, but I just don't want it to become something where, oh, well, you know, our timing wasn't good. Because I know as we're looking at the money that we would hope to have support from for some kind of water alternative beyond desal, because we're tied to the word desal in the current funding we have, I just want to comfort knowing that if we move on this, we're not going to be so late that we miss the boat.
Good. I have to go backwards. You have another
One other comment on Mr. Gruber's report. I note here that the fats, oils, and grease program will commence in January of 2013, and I would hope that that review will also include Vets Hall. I understand that there are issues with respect to the grease traps in Vets Hall, and I think we should have them inspect our own facilities and make sure that we're in compliance there.
It's on the list of the 120 that have been identified as the commercial facilities, that not just the kitchen up here, but also the Legion's facility downstairs. So it's included in the list.
Great, thank you.
I have some more too.
All right.
This does happen to be one of my flagged pages here, but General Manager Gruber, I just wanted to touch on a couple of the other points on your report for this month. Excuse me. And sometimes you do touch on each of the points, but since you didn't, there are a few questions on it. But one is, do we have sort of a timeline and a status report on these two, on the rodeo grounds and the Stewart Street tank design, like next steps or a timeline, and how much have we invested so far with RBF on as a consultant to this? Like where will we actually see it like accomplished? How long has the Stewart Street tank design been sort of under consideration?
Well, that's a whole bunch of questions. Let me do the first one.
Just
last
kind of
month,
a whole overview on
well,
the topic,
yeah, last
I
month
guess.
We brought back a to the board consideration to reevaluate our fire flow, and the second agenda item was regarding the Stewart's or the contract with RBF to reinitiate that because it had expired. Bob and I had a conference call and Jim Adams with RBF, and one of the things the board asked for was a Gantt chart or a timeline for each month. So that'll be part of the December board packet. After talking and after input from the board, RBF felt fairly comfortable that they could get that design and out and ready for bid within a six month window. How much we've allocated specifically towards RBF? There was the design part of it, which is a part we're working on now, and then there was the environmental document. I'd have to refer to Bob on the exact dollar amount. I don't have that in front of me. But one of the major components of this is the funding of it, and the local coastal development permit that we'll have to apply for. Hopefully, it won't be appealed, the project. I think that the community supports it, especially since it's been ratcheted down and it's a smaller scale now than what was originally proposed. So that'll be part of the agenda packet next month. You'll have an understanding of where we are in the process, how much longer it's going to take to get it designed, and then at some point in time we're going to need to have a discussion because we don't want it designed and go out to bid and then not have the money to be able to pay for it. And so that's a discussion that we're going to have at some point in time, whether that's a Prop 218 or waiting till a bond is currently retired within the water department, or money from reserves. So there's lots of different alternatives that we can going on for a long time, and I think that's why I feel a certain sense of urgency to get it done. It's a very important project for the community, especially and I brought some of the community members, the stakeholders, Cambrians, over to that facility and showed it to them, and I know most of the board members have seen it also, and we all agree that it's an important project, needs to be done. So if you don't mind, I'll defer to Bob on the cost originally and the current cost on what we have into this thing so far.
Okay, yeah, and I feel a need to, because of my history here, just to fill you in a little bit on the timing as well. I think the funding is a real critical issue that Jerry mentioned, and RBF probably stopped and started this project two or three times at the district's direction. The work started around 2006 with the request for proposals and the award of a contract to them. There was a planned funding through a Prop 218 related rate increase that had a majority vote against it, so they were ordered to stop work after that occurred. There was another rate increase proposed to help fund the project that was rescinded. They were ordered to stop work after that occurred. So there's been a history of stop starts that were beyond RBF's control. I just want to make sure that's clear, because I hear some, I'm sensing there's some thoughts that this may all be on RBF, and that's not the case. So we are restarting the work. My report does talk about the fact they're doing hydraulic modeling this month, so that's the very first step with the revised fire flow criteria that were discussed at the last meeting. So they're remodeling all the hydraulics on both the Stewart Street and the pump station, the River Grounds pump station, to help them resize the project. And then from that point forward, they do the design work and get it into a bid package. So Jerry was right that the 6 months time frame is what they're shooting for to get it to where you can go out to bid. But the permits are part of that, and that's going to weigh heavily on the progress of the work. I don't have my CIP report in front of me at this meeting, but I'm going to go by rough memory. I would say that it's probably been approximately 40 to 50% of the budget spent to date on that. And their original contract was around, I want to say, $460,000
to $475,000. Hey, Bob, let's make sure
give
we get
a status
update.
No good.
Chart. What was the Kathy Tanner. We're back online. We're back. We have several public comments on this issue. First one is Amanda Rice.
First of all, thank you for the congratulations, President McKinnon, and congratulations to Gail and to Merle, who's not here today. I just had a quick question on the water manager's report. I was just curious about having the results of the...
Thank you very much, President McKinnon. I regret that I won't be able to say that often in the future.
Well, thank you.
I congratulate also the elected officials, Ms. Robinette and Rice, and I wish you my heartfelt sympathy as you engage in all the paper. I want to raise a question that I've been raising since July in emails to the staff. And in September, in August, and I want to point you to page 18 of your agenda today. And I'd like clarification at some point. Probably it will come up in December. Even though I've been coming to these meetings with stunning regularity for a decade of my whole life, I still do not quite understand where the policy is given in the first paragraph for demand offsets from past conservation rebates, as well as retrofits on resales. And I don't understand how the demand offsets from past conservation rebates, totaling approximately $39,500, are related to the policy of conservation of water. When I work with my dear friends in first and second grade on math, learning about numbers is exhilarating because we have a correlation between reality and numbers. And I would like to see the data on the relationship between demand offsets from past conservation rebates and the $39,500. But that's not the only thing. I'd like to see the EDU allocation on the four new residential construction projects that are listed there. I know that two of them are intent to serve letters, but the other two are not. On what basis did two projects get approved without having intent to serve letters, since the moratorium is not lifted? And how is that, if it is, correlated with demand offsets from past, et cetera? I would also like to know, and I turn you now to page 28 in the Administrative Office report. You probably have done this as well. Just look back over the past quarter of a year at when these reports will be done. Again and again, we have heard that reports on wait lists, on intent to in December, when they accomplish their report, their study, over a four-month period at least, that they will also include, as I asked to hear about months ago, Exhibit B and D in the Municipal Code, where it talks about existing commitments. I want to see those two lists in revised form, currently updated, because otherwise we citizens have pathetically little idea where our money is going on these kinds of issues. I regret to see that five houses are going to be demolished as the legal notice requests this morning. Where exactly are those five families, probably multiple families in each house, going to live? So, friends, I petition you already in an informal but passionate sense. Please, in the coming year, look at housing policy in Cambria and how utilities impact the degree and scope of housing development and housing maintenance. Thank you.
Thank you. Follow-up on that, in the conservation ad hoc committee, one of the prerequisites was the fact we would have a workshop. And I see conservation as a wonderful thing where we all support it, but it's a rat's nest, and it's not understood by members of the board as well as members of the public, and it deserves not transparency, just explanation. I think the public would enjoy it, and they need to understand some of the parameters that are being used, who's on first on wait list versus remodels. It's a whole, like I said, rat's nest that has to be cleared up. And I know the general manager is on it, and you're doing a fine job, but we have to really get aggressive to bring it to a conclusion. I did, but that wasn't my comment. I did have one that was the water on page 19. Do we have, maybe this is to Bob, but it's under your program, the well levels of Santa Rosa Creek, and my question is, how much did we pump last year from Santa Rosa Creek when we're in our water management plan saying we're going to pump 200 acre feet per year as a nominal on Santa Rosa for, right?
Yeah, as I recall, we were ranging in the 100 to 180 acre feet. If you give me just a second, I can look this table up, and I happen to have the urban water management plan with me that has a table in that shows the, it's color-coded, that shows you the total pumping, and then there's a vertical bar chart that's kind of stacked. It's that shows Santa Rosa. And San Simeon. So let me just find that. Bear with me for a second, because I just happen to have that, and I want to try to answer you as best I can.
The purpose is, how close does that come to our estimate, the viability of our estimate that we put in the plan? And so from that standpoint, if we're 180 or something like that, that's fine.
Okay. Let me look up this table to see if I have last year's in there. I can't. I should, but...
And I'm not going to let you off the hook either, General Manager. I got a question for you as well.
I was just commenting. It'd be extremely helpful if the board could, in anticipation, ask us questions before the board meeting so we could be prepared and not stumble through a document.
Because of the way it was written in here, I just leave it open, even in fact. But we should be verifying those assumptions. We've just gone through a year, and the management plan says 200 acre feet. How close are we doing to what we expect? And I'll leave this as an open item as well. Under the water department on page 20, it says that we have 17 times we've had leakage on customer side. My concern, as I expressed many times, is that we only audit what's happening every 2 months when we do the guy goes around the truck and records the data. But how much water do we actually lose before we, in fact, determine there's a leak and then either shut it off or shut the water culprit off or repair it? And I'm saying, is that a big source of perhaps water that we are letting go by the boards by not having our radio frequency meters networked into a central computer?
Well, when the analysis, and because the bottom line is we could implement all these things. We could solve the rat's nest issue regarding the conservation department. But again, that takes staff and that takes money. So I think with the resources that we have, and those are pretty scarce resources as it relates to staffing, I think we're doing an incredible job. We inherited this mess.
Oh, yeah. I totally appreciate the fact that we are trying to climb out of a hole.
And there's been a lot of comments about, what's going on with this or what's going on with that. I think we're making progress. And what we're doing is we're peeling the onion back. And what I won't do is bring you something that I feel that we don't have all the answers to. And sometimes that takes longer than we originally anticipated. But, the conservation program in its entirety was a policy decision adopted by the board as part of the fiscal year budget. So that was a commitment by the board to have a conservation department. It was a financial commitment. And so we don't have all the answers, but I think that we're making some pretty good progress. Again, with this, in a perfect world, if it was a large utility company where I had unlimited resources, I could take this and say, okay, let's go to monthly reads, or let's interface everything from a radio read perspective. But there's cost associated with that.
No.
So,
oh, sure. But what I would expect a supervisor of water department to be is analytical, besides turning a crank that turns the valve on and off. And when he has 17 leaks, if that happens to be 10 acre feet of water that's going out the door, he should flag that. And the fact, if it's negligible, that's one thing. But if it's a major area, I would say that should need an explanation. You're not going to be able to do everything. I understand that completely. Yeah. And you have to prioritize what we're going to do first.
Yeah. So, and I agree. And I think the water department is in tune with what you're saying. Is, you know, if it's a major leak, then they're going to stop. You know, if you look at everything from a macro perspective and not a micro perspective, the macro perspective is the unaccounted for water, which is a difference between water pumped and water sold.
Yeah.
And we're below that 10%. So I think if we were significantly higher than that, then I think this would warrant additional research. Part of the conservation program that we're working on now is what are those areas that we're going to be looking
at? Shows the production from both the San Simeon and Santa Rosa aquifers, and it's from 1967 through 2010. So I don't have 2011 data. But I can tell you from looking at this and just extrapolating that in roughly, it looks like 2008, there was a little over 200 acre feet pumped from Santa Rosa.
Perfect.
And then in 2009, it looks like it dropped down to about 180. And then in 2010, I'd say it was around 140 or so acre feet. That's just looking at this graph. And I don't know if you can – I can pass this to you if you want to see it.
Yeah.
But that's pretty much what we had historically in the last few years, excepting that I don't have the 2011 data in my head on that particular number.
11 or 12.
Right, or up to that, but that's fine.
It really does validate the assumptions that are made in the management plan. 200 acre feet.
Yes, especially that one fine. Year when you're at 210.
That was the question. Thank you very much.
Sure.
With that, we have long-term water supply alternatives. 6B.
Thank you, President McKinnon and board members. Before you today is item 6B, the long-term water supply alternatives. A little background on this. The Army Corps is identifying four alternatives for us for a long-term supplemental source of water for the community. And before they got too far down the process, we do have a limited amount of resources that they're working with, we wanted to make sure, based on staff's recommendation and the data that was provided to us by San Simeon Community Services District, that we don't spend a lot more time on this particular alternative. But with that being said, I'd like to turn it over, if it's okay with the board, to the district engineer, Bob Gressens. And he can explain a little bit more about where we're going with this and what is really a reasonable range of alternatives as it is identified within the environmental process, the EIR, EIS, NEPA, CEQA. And so with that, I'll turn it over to Bob.
Okay, thank you, Jerry. I don't have that much to add to what Jerry just said, basically, since we do have a discussion item on that San Simeon wastewater alternative and whether we want to continue with that analysis. So that's a separate discussion item today. But again, just as a reminder, there are right now four alternatives based on the September. I can add just verbally beyond the report that, and tagging on to the earlier word of discussion, there was a hearing today with the Senate's Environment and Public Works Committee on a draft word of bill that Senator Dianne Feinstein actually drafted. And I think California is well represented. Senator Barbara Boxer is the chair of that committee. So that's where you start off with the word of bill. So it's in the early stages right now, but it's definitely something that we need to report back to you on as agreed to earlier. So I won't repeat that point. But that pretty much summarizes my report.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Director Robinette, you have a question?
Just a couple of comments. So we are watching the word in. It's not like almost finished. It's just starting, and that's good. And you're going to come back, and we're going to talk a little more about this the San Simeon recycled water alternative later. Okay.
I have one public comment request. Mary Webb, 6B.
Mary Webb, Cambria. Yeah, I'm confused because I did hear the district engineer talk about number two on this alternative about surface storage within Whale Rock Reservoir and this language that it's just for wintertime storage of CCSD-provided water. When we had the water alternatives workshop, we had like A and B. Yeah. It was CSD water possibly being going from the winter from here back up to Whale Rock, and B was the water exchange with Nacimiento, of which we have a right to of 2,300 acre feet or something a year, and we combined those alternatives into one generic Whale Rock alternative, but we did not eliminate our ability to purchase Nacimiento or do an exchange with San Luis Obispo for our Nacimiento water. So my first question is, why has the Nacimiento, our rights to Nacimiento water, been completely removed from this list?
Yeah.
I'll double check the notes from that September 18th meeting, but as I recall, physically, as far as from an environmental review, they're going to be very similar, whether you have the A or B on that. And I'll double-check my notes. If I left it out, I'll add it back in to the discussion for the Part B, where you could buy additional water above and beyond what we could store from our own. They're, in my mind, at least my view, is they're very similar between A and B when you go to do the environmental analysis. So we'll try to clarify that and look at the re-listen to the tape on the September 18th workshop to make sure we got that right.
My response, they may be similar for an environmental, they're not really similar for an environmental impact review for an EIR. What's happening basically is that our choices are without any documentation, without really a lot of explanation. Things are dropping off the list already. And we don't have a lot of money left, and so I understand why things are just going to start dropping off the list. But if we do choose a water project of whatever in the end, these things are not ever have gotten the analysis they really deserved. And that's really unfortunate because we have, looked at some of these things for 20 years. They still will not get the full analysis because we're not really, we don't have enough money to have the review that they really deserve.
So. Whether it be or not, the Army Corps, I just had my notes that it was considerably more, like the district engineer said, it's $40 million versus $30 million for going with Nacimiento water. That would the exchange. It would be $40 million, and you'd have a cost, an acre-foot cost of $7,250 versus with the CCSD water, it's $52.50. That was the reason that they elected the one that is listed there. I'm not sure.
Well, we just didn't have a lot of consensus around any of the cost analysis for any of those.
I totally agree with that as well. Exactly.
So, okay.
But it's relative.
It's already being refined now as only wintertime storage of CSD water is my point. And obviously the first one, or the one about number four, using recycled water from San Simeon, I see you have on a different agenda item now, so I'll talk about that then. Right? 9A?
All right.
Thank you.
Further comments on that. So we move on to the consent agenda. I have two comments from the public. Amanda Rice, consent agenda items A and E, followed by Ms.
Difference between just 1% and 1% per year for 11 years. Kathy's usually always gets it right. Gave a lot of details that day. Thank you. The other thing about the consent agenda, two other things that I wanted to raise. One is on the expenditure report and related to the raise in the increase in trash rates. And I noticed on the expenditure report that we spent like $500 and almost $600 to dispose of green waste, and we also paid some dump fees. And I was just curious what the agreement is between the district and the Mission Country in terms of getting rid of our own district trash, whether the street whether we have recycling along the street, whether the trash bins along the street, and if the district has projects where they've got a lot of green waste, if that's something they still have to pay for or not. It's just something that occurred to me. And the last thing is the meeting schedule for 2013. Kind of concerns me. There are two of the directors are missing, but the main concern I have is that they seem to all be scheduled at 12:30, and I would really like to see at least one or two evening meetings, because there are people who would attend those meetings because they can't come during the daytime, and when they're appropriate, because I know last year we did have a couple that were scheduled in the evening time that made it so that there were people that could come who wouldn't normally be able to attend those meetings. So I'd just like to put my two cents in on that one. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Burton.
Mahala Burton. Buried in the contract analysis for the high school well is a little bitty sentence that says, potable water, non-potable, will be provide it to the middle school for playing fields. Now, I don't know if that was tossed in to sweeten the pot to get the lease updated, but every bit of non-potable water that we have, we may need for our own drinking water, because the brackish water concept may turn out to be no brackish water. It may turn out to be that we will have to use our water that we're pumping down to hold back the saltwater intrusion, whatever is left. So how much water, non-potable water, is going to the middle school? That's a great idea. If they're going to develop the fields, we wouldn't have to do anything at the east ramp. To the pipeline, the city of San Luis Obispo is paying a huge buy-in for the water. They'd like to sell some of that water to us in an exchange of what is stored in Whale Rock from the creek that fills Whale Rock. So this concept and idea of taking our rainwater and storing it there, I doubt that that's going to happen, but I just thought I'd bring that up.
Good point. Ready. You know, just as another point, the discussion we had with Tom Martin, which was a good one, their increase, we were going to see if we could ask for a consideration for trash cans, new trash cans, and I know you've asked that several years ago in a row, but this is the time, or forever else hold your peace. It's worth it. Yeah. But.
And I never, thank you, President McKinnon, for bringing that to my attention. I need to send that email back out again, because I never got a response, or just go down to his office and show up one day. So,
cool. Thank you. So we are ready for a motion to accept the consent agenda as shown in your bulletin agenda. Do we have a motion?
I move we accept the consent agenda.
I second the motion.
Those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Accepted. Motion carried. There are no hearings and appeals. We'll move to regular business. And first one is 9A, discussion consideration not to include detailed analysis of San Simeon CSD wastewater reclamation water alternative within the water supply project EIR EIS. General Manager.
Thank you, President McKinnon and board members. I'm going to turn this over to Bob Greshens, and we'll kind of go dovetail back and forth on why we're bringing this to the board today. So with that, Bob, if you would handle the staff report,
okay.
I'd appreciate
Thank
it.
Thank you, Jerry.
One of those options or alternatives that was directed into September 18th, 2012 workshop. We had a series of four workshops, and that was the final workshop on trying to determine what list the Army Corps would work from on alternatives. The Army Corps tech team had developed an earlier estimate of about 83 acre feet for this potential supply, and then they had further discussions with the San Simeon CSD general manager that indicated that San Simeon had plans to use more of their wastewater for recycled water locally in a future project phase. So when we ran the numbers on this, it came down to about 10 acre feet. And that's a pretty low number for 3 miles of pipeline and the cost that may go along with that. So we just want to flag that to your attention and say, do we still want to stay on that same course of direction in going forward for just 10 acre feet in analyzing this alternative? I did attach the as just a hopefully a useful reminder, the summary from the what we call the tier two cost from the workshop four, so you can see where those costs came out. And then I included a detailed cost estimate of this alternative if there were any questions on that, and then also a summary of the telephone conversation notes that occurred between the CCSD or the San Simeon CSD contact and our Army Corps tech team engineer. In this case, it was CDM's Savonetic. So I'd be glad to go in more detail if you'd like, but I'll keep it at that for right now. And if you have questions, please let me know.
Okay. I have two for public comment.
Then okay. Go ahead.
Elizabeth Bettenhausen. And then Mary Webb.
Thank you very much, Mr. President. I was at the September 18th meeting and recall that I asked whether there had been any conversations with San Simeon Community Services District about this option and was told no. But now I read in this documentation that there had been conversations between the Army Corps and San Simeon Community Services District in June. I would like only to say that this could be an instance, along with the sand is shallow. Whether the sand is on bedrock and how deep, when we ran across that study results from out here at Shamel, it was just embarrassing. And you all are much more gifted leaders than to put up with this. You are a much more gifted general manager than to put up with this. And general engineer. It is a question, friends, of engaging intense conversation with the presuppositions of government bureaucracy. Thank you, Mr. Jefferson. And I did not vote for Paul Ryan. I did not vote for dear Matt Mitt. But I want the local government, for which I pay directly, to insist on hard rock data supporting policy decisions. Otherwise, we go flitting around like a kite in the sky when the wind shifts because the pelicans are diving. So please, please, do more solid insistence on hard data before making a decision. Thank you.
Thank you. Mary Webb?
Yes, I'm sorry, I didn't really have a lot of time to read all of the staff report before I came in today, so I do see that there's sort of a summary that the engineer has put in the staff report. Is San Simeon planning on using then all of their recycling water to be tertiary treated and eliminating their ocean outfall? Do you know?
Planning.
We ran through the numbers. It was about, I think, 18,000. Let me look at my staff report again on this number. Um, We estimated all but about 18,000 gallons per day might be available during the summer months if it was to have any water in excess of what they were planning. So that came to around 10 acre feet.
And why is only summer water being considered and not
because
their yearly?
Do you want me to continue this dialogue? I want to clear it with you.
I'm sorry.
Very quickly, if it's quick.
As long as it's, I get my direction from the board president. The summer months are used for this because it's a recycled water supply, and the intent for recycled water was non-potable irrigation, so your irrigation demands occur in the summer months.
About all the recycled, the water that is available to us from Cambria's supply, which is, 700-800 acre feet a year. Our entire water supply can be recycled. And I would assume the entire water supply of San Simeon can be recycled and tertiary treated. So in any case, I have discussed this some with the Coastal Commission staff because I happened to be there yesterday. And, it's a huge carrot with not only the Coastal Commission staff, but a lot of environmental organizations to eliminate polluting ocean outfalls. And part of the big problem with Cambria's desalination was installing new ocean intakes and ocean outfalls where we don't have any today. Water Quality Control Board, we're trying to eliminate these ocean outfalls all over the state because of the pollution factor. And San Simeon has been penalized many times for their polluting ocean outfall. So the whole idea with that recycled project is that we could possibly take water, help do even a biosolids dewatering or something with them and eliminate that ocean outfall, which is polluting Monterey Bay Sanctuary. So there would be money for that, and that's a whole different line of grant money that you'd be looking at, other than a WERDA grant and things like that. So I know we don't have a lot of money to give the Army Corps to study all of these things in detail anymore, and it's really too bad because these are the technologies of the future. These are the ones we really should be pursuing. In addition with other projects, multiple small projects can really garner us a lot of acre feet of water when you put them all together.
Yep.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Director Robinette.
Thank you. What I have to share and ask, I want to preface it with a couple of observations on my part. And that is, number one, that what I'm going to talk about is to be a unifying position. And because it is that we have resources in this room that together, and I see us working together, we have the resources to find solutions. We have the resources to move forward. I see public input and things that are shared here come from a great deal of involvement and research and reading, like I do too. I see a very positive acknowledgement. I don't see anything at odds. The frustration is this. As we look at this report, it's not that anyone has intentionally wanted to share something that is more of almost spinning our wheels or not getting anywhere. That's not where I am. What I see here is a concern, though, and it does go back to things that were mentioned in public comment, too. I am a firm believer of having people commit in writing. If somebody did or did not talk with the people in San Simeon, it has got to be, at least from this day forward, we can't go back, we know that, things where we have conversations or we're told we have conversations have got to be in writing and dated. I worked with state and federal regulations and education. There is nothing in that department we ever did that wasn't written and dated because you have it to go back on. So we can't go back on that, and this is not a shame talk. This is not anyone to blame talk. This is a lessons learned observation. So when I look at San Simeon, we could go back and say, well, who said, and she said, or he said, well, no, we don't know, we don't have it in writing. But I think as we go forward on this, I think it's that I feel in some ways with the Army Corps and the consultants that we have really been underserved and misserved in this. Because if we're told that San Simeon is a viable, feasible possibility as one of the considerations or one of the options, we should have had the confidence to believe that somebody surely talked to somebody there to see that they were agreeable to it, that they wanted to do it. I have to say the same thing is true with our water storage that we're talking about with Whale Rock. When I first heard about it, I just thought it was a great idea as one consideration, because not only could we, if we were really in a serious situation, we could buy water, we could take water in a pipeline here for our needs, but that we would have that option to store. So then, when I see this, my next question is someone that has authority and oversight over Whale Rock either storing our weapons? So I think that's what I'm reflecting on right now. And while the Army Corps has used their fabulous software programs to share ideas with us, I want to make sure that somebody's been talking to these other agencies and getting a commitment in writing so that we know, okay, we seriously can pursue looking at Whale Rock, or we can seriously pursue would it even be feasible with these storage ponds, or we can seriously know that the brackish water treatment might work. And this is not finger-pointing at anyone. It's just a process that I'm suggesting. Thank you.
Bob?
Okay. I had a couple of thoughts come to mind as I'm listening to everybody, too. First of all, in response to, I feel I need to clarify the record here that the conversation notes were dated October 11th besides the June date. So the updated information didn't get to us till after the workshop 4. So, and that was really indicating that the San Simeon CSD had a future phase of their recycled water program. So I believe that happened after the workshop. So, you know, be that as it is, I don't know why we said there was no communication with San Simeon CSD at the workshop. If there had been an earlier conversation, it's just oversight on someone's part, because I know I wasn't part of that discussion. So so probably an error was made in relaying that. In listening to what Ms. Webb was saying, too, about the storage, you know, there's another possibility there if you desire, maybe part of the direction to the Corps would be to look at a seasonal storage in combination with the recycled water. That would add cost to it, but it might allow capturing more of their wastewater supply during the winter months. The 2003 recycled water planning had identified roughly 50 acre feet of existing demand that could be converted to recycled water. Then in the future, it estimated another 50 acre feet of future, basically outdoor irrigation water that could be added to that. So you're talking roughly 100 acre feet at build out for the recycled water supply. So we could do some balancing and looking at numbers if you Whale Rock and then storage off of San Simeon and the wastewater off San Simeon CSD. So it was the intent, as I understood it back then, was to spread out the sources of supply as much as possible for this environmental analysis, which was the direction that culminated into a motion at that point in time. So that's just a few thoughts I thought I'd share with you. Thank you.
I think my only thought on that, my only response is, as we were considering these possibilities, though, don't you think it's the most basic fundamental thing of all that don't put choices out in front of us if we haven't checked them out to make sure that we even have that as a possibility? That's just a it would seem that that's the most fundamental thing, that we wouldn't be given a list of possibilities unless the list was based on other agencies saying, yeah, if you decide, then yes, we would we would work cooperatively with you. Or do we just start with things that are all around here in our area, our geographical location, and then we choose them, and then do we go see if they might let us participate?
Well,
maybe I'm missing it.
I can reflect back a little bit on the earlier master planning work that we did, that we were, one of the issues of concern with the Whale Rock was all the agreements that had to be set in place and making sure we had that consensus that could occur, and that was always, when we weighted those alternatives, a concern of at least a technical team at the time. I had a few discussions, I don't know if I wrote them down or not, but I did have one or two discussions with San Luis Obispo, one of the people at San Luis Obispo, about this alternative earlier on, probably a good 9-10 months ago, mentioning that fact that yes, we were developing this alternative again, and we didn't want to surprise them with it once it goes public. So, and that was a very positive conversation I had. I said, yeah, that's we'll work with you basically, but definitely that person wasn't a policy level, decision maker. So it was more on a technical level that we had those discussions.
So are we saying that with Whale Rock we don't have any real approval if we even went that way?
Could you repeat the question, please?
Are you saying then that we don't have anything in writing from Whale Rock that would be a policy?
The technical level discussions that we've had to date.
Are you saying, Bob, that the Army Corps has not contacted in any way either San Simeon or Cayucas, the Whale Rock Commission, City of San Luis? I know your comment, but the Army Corps, are you speaking for?
I've been serving as their contact with the City of San Luis Obispo, and mm-hmm. I've relayed my conversations on to the technical team in the past.
Could they have made contact at this point?
It would be a duplication of efforts if they did at a technical level, but they certainly could. If mm-hmm. they
I understand Director Robinette's question, and it certainly is something we want to have as established potential versus simply going off almost half-cocked in a direction. But your point?
Well, I just hope I live long enough to see this process through. I'm kind of a pragmatic sort, and I think that, I'm fine with deleting the San Simeon because I don't think that that's going to result in anything. I'd be more interested in just something very practical, like is there a portable desal device that we can haul out of the garage if we need to generate some water, or if we can put together a plan to use recycled water for our hotels on Moonstone Drive and in that way save some of the potable water that we have. And it'd be great if we could include that as an alternative and let the Army Corps at least flush it out and tell us that it's a good thing, bad thing, how much it costs, that sort of thing. And so if we can substitute something of that nature for what we have there right now with respect to San Simeon, I'd be all happy about that. It just makes more sense to do something that's at all feasible and practical and may result in something in the near term.
Well, I can respond to that if you
certainly
wish. As far as a package desalination facility, there are lots of those available, so they could certainly look into that. Where the rub comes in is on the permitting for the intake and then the concentrate water. So there are systems like that out there. And whether you could get some kind of emergency authorization to do that, I don't know whether the Coastal Commission would actually allow something like that along our coastal zone. And then on recycled water, we had two areas. We had an area of concern where we actually bifurcated the demands because we were worried about potential habitat impacts once you go beyond what we called a zero net increase in the potential diversion from the aquifer system there. It's a sensitive area, and it's a very complicated area where we are trying to stay without pulling any more water out of that mound for future demand. So we had a demand split up where we said, okay, let's just look at our current potable demands that we could switch to recycled water. So we came up with the 50-acre feet. Then we thought, well, if you go beyond that 50-acre feet, it's going to trigger some pretty serious concerns about pulling that water level down in a dry month and possibly impacting habitat. So then we had a second level that we called increase in demands above the kind of the balance point. When we looked at this years ago, we thought, well, let's prioritize a potable water system first. So we actually had three levels of priority. We had fire safety first, which was storage and bottlenecks in the system. Then we said potable water next, because we knew by getting an independent water supply, at the time it was desalination, that you'd actually produce more wastewater that would go through the plant and charge that mound. So we had it balanced out so that that recycled water, that future recycled water demand, would actually be balanced out by the future production of potable water. So you'd be able to keep that in equilibrium. So that's part of the thinking we had at the time as far as not going full speed ahead on recycled water. And we could certainly do the existing demands and switch them over, but that's not really producing more water. It's just kind of changing your use of the water out of the aquifer. So I don't want to get too complicated, but that was basically our thinking at the time. Yeah.
We have an issue here in 9A, and San Simeon CSD recycled water is not viable. And I think for the most part, correct me if I'm wrong, when you look at brackish water desalinization, they're going to be fairly equivalent technologies if from an EIS standpoint, whether it be brackish water or recycled water of acquiring whatever acre feet that's involved. Why do it? Is it possible just simply to eliminate that item, that investigation on the part of the Army Corps, and still have a viable, at the end of the day, EIR, EIS document? Do we have to have four alternatives? Can we have three? And we have three that are viable. This one is not only ridiculously small, but it still costs you $11 million to create 10-acre feet of recycled water into potable water.
The answer is yes. You can go down to three alternatives if you want to.
Okay. And from that standpoint, are we really losing anything? I never really understood the San Simeon concept, even at 84-acre feet, simply because of its similarity with the brackish water at the end of the day, and it's so small a quantity that you receive for such an expensive outlay of funds.
I know the some of the history on that, too, was it was suggested in a comment letter from the Coastal Commission staff on the notice of preparation of the EIR, EIS. So they had listed some ideas within their letter, and that was one to take
as well
take
as
wastewater.
Brackish water was as
right,
well.
Correct.
Brackish
so water, so we were being responsive somewhat to the Coastal Commission's staff's past letter in developing that concept, even though we knew it was lacking in capacity. We thought it was lacking in capacity at 83 acre feet. So at 10 acre feet, it certainly is much worse.
Okay. So from simplicity standpoint, from my view, and I know I've spoken to Director Clift, and his position is also that it's not worth bothering with, and just to go to three and have it as simple as that, and just delete this item. Thoughts, comments?
I would agree with that three would be fine. My biggest question would be with the three now that we would still have on the table, that we're considering, the three that are left, wouldn't it be advisable to make sure
it's all on our property except for that injection well shown on the off the on the Caltrans right away.
Okay. Yeah, 1. I'm just thinking. I would hope that whoever was presenting these to us, the Army Corps and the consultants, wouldn't present to us something that we'd find out at the end of the day, well, that's really a good one, and yes, it looks like it would work, but you can't have access to it. So that's just why I'm saying it would be good, I think, on the three now that we have on the table, to know that if we were to choose one of those, that we could actually move forward on that.
Mr. President, then, given the discussion and what seems to be the appropriate thing to do here, I would then move that we inform the Army Corps of Engineers that we will be deleting the or not requesting the detailed analysis of the San Simeon CSD wastewater alternative within the Water Supply Project EIR, and that we choose not to have them review that for our project.
Second.
I second.
We've had our discussion. Those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carried. As a follow-up, I would maybe take issue with the discussion that the district engineer talked about with respect to a portable desal system. And a case in point, Royal Caribbean has a flagship that has 6,400 people capacity. They have 260,000 gallons a day that's operating every day, 365 days a year. And that is just a reverse osmosis desal system. And it's very similar to the one that we did get a proposal, and there's many. General Electric is just one of the many suppliers today that are shipping these containerized packages that are looked at by some folks as being substandard. But it's similar to you going out and buying a Chevrolet from your Chevrolet dealer versus going to the local garage and say, build me an auto feet per year from a containerized desal system that would be the core basis that could be implemented in a brackish water installation. And of course, you're absolutely right. You have these 13 wonderful agencies that will be ready to take you to task that you'll have to convince for permitting. And from that standpoint, I think the director Thompson was suggesting the use of a portable desal system is viable and should be considered as part of somewhere in the thinking of our long-term water supply solution. And at the end of the day, and I'll just add this only because this is my last shot, and I apologize for that. Maybe this is the time that we have some very knowledgeable people in our community, as well as the directors, that have a common goal, as Director Robinette said, of getting this finally done after 25 years. And maybe this is the time to have a committee that is made up of members of the public as well as board members, so that we don't have these hiccups and glitches in communications. With the best of intentions, with transparency, we still have a gap. And it'll always be there to some degree in communications. But if we had a broader group that could work through this EIR, EIS, so at the end of the day we have something we can all salute to, and maybe we're on our way to finally solving a major problem. So I leave that just simply for thought, but not to forget that portable desal mechanism. If that is one of the viable alternatives, maybe Whale Rock wins, maybe off-stream storage is a better solution. But we must keep the momentum. We must have it built on fact, and I think you're doing a great job, Bob. And I know you have frustrations with the Corps, and you've done a lot of work with them, and I'm not sure what you're going to have from them at the end of the day, but you're doing your best. So I'll leave it at that. I think we should.
Mr. President, when you do leave the board, I hope that you're available for recruitment to such a body.
Yes, this would be a great idea.
No,
didn't everybody hear that, sort of?
4-20-50 program standards, located on page 120.
Thank you, President McKinnon, board members. Did you everybody get their green sheet amendments to this, the changes to this? There were some slight modifications in the title of the ordinance, the changes to it. Just a brief background, and then I'll turn it over to Bob. We see a real opportunity here, again, with retrofit points and the opportunity to not wait till the conservation program is adopted by the board for Bill Madouse, which we anticipate bringing to the board in January. And then that would be another 3 months after that. Before, because the conservation program that's being proposed by Bill Madouse of Madouse Water Management includes significant amendments and changes to the municipal code as it relates to the conservation portion of the municipal code. So this is staff's effort to preempt the approval of that comprehensive program that we're paying for. And as we move forward, we think it's a real opportunity for us to capture some more retrofit points. To answer Amanda Rice's question, we have audited all the hotels. We have ordered the appropriate shower heads, and what we're doing now is an analysis to determine what hotels will yield the most points. And so with that, I'm going to turn it over to Bob. And thanks, Bob.
Yep. Thank you, Jerry. Yeah, this is to update our water efficiency standards that are currently called out in our district municipal code. And they may change again once the Madouse Water Management, report is fully vetted. But this is our staff's recommendation to play a little catch-up with what's out there. And we've mentioned, I think, in past meetings, the last general manager's report, my addendum to that, talked about how the county had passed the Title 19 to their code, which included some of the California Green Building Code standards, or we call it Cal Green for short. So some of these changes are reflecting the Cal Green standards. So we did miss the fact that Appendix 4.16A had some of the same standards in it, so that's why there was an addendum, was to make sure it was consistent types of projects. We feel that by updating the standards now, it's going to further the cause to meet the water reduction goal that was adopted in the 2010 Urban Water Management Plan back in February of this year. So we do have a 5% reduction goal by 2020 that this will further. Again, the code appendix 4.16A describes the water-saving plumbing and fixtures for new construction, whereas the Chapter 4.20 program standards apply to water conservation and the retrofit program. So there's a little difference between those sections in the code. The proposed updates originated with our intent to only revise the existing showerhead standard. We found that there were a number of 1.5-gallon-minute showerheads on the market, where our current standard was 2. And this was the only exception we had to the Cal Green Building Code. The Cal Green Building Code still has the 2.0-gallon-per-minute showerhead, and we think we could do better with the 1.5-gallon-a-minute shower head. I've listed about 5 or 6 manufacturers that provide those: Niagara, Delta, Jetstream, High Sierra, and Oxygenetics can each provide the 1.5-gallon-a-minute shower heads now. I also referenced the past AWWA Research Foundation study, which was on the end use of residential water use. I may have the year in there wrong. I think that was a 2000 study as opposed to a 1999 study. But that you apply the data from what they found from a very large survey, and by going from 2 gallons a minute to 1.5 gallons a minute, and this is theoretical, assuming everybody in town were to adopt the 1.5 gallon a minute shower heads, you could save approximately 20.5 acre feet per year. That's what 100% conversion over to that, which is about 6.7 million gallons. So that was some of the thoughts we had on you know, why it would make sense to go down to the 1.5 gallon a minute shower head. And that's not including the savings that would occur from the hotels and motels. As Jerry mentioned, we're just recently surveyed, so we know there's a lot of potential there as well. So because of the 2010 CalGreen standards and the relative availability of the more efficient standards and appliances, we recommend revising the water efficiency.
Just for clarification also, in looking at the green sheet just now, I noticed there were some strikeouts that I was just clarifying with Bob are inadvertent. So in introducing the ordinance, it should be without striking out Section 1 in the word section, and then 1 in that first paragraph. Category number 2, toilet tank type, should not be struck out. And similarly, Category 5, that strikeout should not be there as well. So in introducing the ordinance, it should be with that correction.
Okay.
Thank you.
I have one public comment. Elizabeth?
I'm sorry, I don't have a copy of the green sheet, so I assume that what I'm going to talk about might not be addressed in that at all. I'd like you to look on page 120 at the fiscal impact of this, and according to this, there really isn't much. I'm totally in support of becoming more efficient in water fixtures. I think that makes complete sense. But I do have a question. I'm glad to hear that it's only a theoretical positing of 100% conversion by residents to their shower of their shower heads. So we don't have any data here on what would happen with commercial conversion. But if we speculate that in theory 100% of the people in town get better shower heads to save water, that would save approximately 20.5 acre feet, it says, which is almost 3% of the revenue, just theoretically speaking, for the CCSD. I just want to remind you that some months ago I asked, when we look at conservation, we look also at the question of the reduction of the revenue. And we've heard today that if we had more revenue, we could do more analysis by staff because we'd have more staff, et cetera. This is a big policy issue. And in fact, we might apparently have to change today's action when we get the comprehensive conservation report in 2 months. So this seems almost premature. We're taking action again, and then we might have to change the action because we've got better data. But my sum request is, please, when you look at efficiency and look at conservation, look at the question of revenue for the CCSD. I am a conservationist of the first order. I am an efficiency fan of the first order. But I don't want us to make decisions without having fiscal impact data.
We can come back to you and research that question. I mean, we're finding there's 1.5 gallon a minute shower heads readily available now, and, you know,
you know, conservation is like motherhood. Everybody's for it. But there is a significant impact that eventually comes around to a thing called rate increases. Because we're on one side, we're reducing revenue stream, and we're increasing costs with rebates and many other things. But it's still the right thing to do. It is motherhood. One of the things that I challenge you on is when we first came to Cambria, of course, we tried our shower and it just dribbled out, and the plumber says, "It will give me a few minutes." And of course, he cranked 55 into 80 psi on our regulator, and we were happy. When you define 60 as your benchmark and the local plumber cranks it to 80, you go from 1.5 over 2, because the flow rate is pressure times area times some flow constant. So pressure is directly proportional. And many of our regulators in Cambria, according to Mr. Adams as well as several of the plumbers, don't work at all. They just take whatever the pressure that comes through from the CCSD, and that's what you get. So you could have 90 PSI, and whatever savings you thought you were going to get is long gone and out the drain, so to speak. So I'm for it, but it just seems like why didn't the state adopt 1.5? And really, when you look at 20 acre feet, that's huge. Because with all your $800 to $1 million of meters, RF meters, and the leakage going from 15% down to 8%, you only got 35 or 40 acre feet from all that effort. And you're getting it just from a $10 shower head. That's amazing. Great job. But it's strictly theory, and the fact is you're going to get a very, very small portion of what you're doing. But it's the right thing to do, the shower heads.
President McKenna, may yes. I, for a moment, just a few, cleaning up some kind of rate structure that promotes conservation. The other thing is you're right. Elizabeth's absolutely right. It does represent a decrease in revenue, but there's also a cost that offsets that associated with producing water, and that's the electrical cost and the pumping cost and the chemical cost and the staff cost. So there is a somewhat of an offset relating to that. So it's not just a pure loss in revenue. It's proportional to the amount of water saved and the amount of water that it takes to pump out of the ground, to treat that water, to put it in the distribution system, to hold it in storage tanks. So there's historically a savings associated with that. So if we're going to be a water efficient or community and a conservation community, then you know sure our revenues will drop. But I think that may be the time for us to look at our overall rate structure and have that conversation as a board.
It's just reality, yeah. I also would say to you that the more you reduce your waste dilution with water, the more difficult you have in pumping water through pipes and so forth, and the instances of clogging and plugging of piping becomes a secondary issue, but one that is added cost. So there's a limit where that can go down until it's a major problem. But Amanda Rice has a question, I guess.
Amanda Rice, thank you, President McKinnon. Actually, not a question, but this is my wheelhouse. I've been studying for 5 years, and I agree 100% with Ms. Bettenhausen that this is probably premature, especially with the Meadows study coming out. An ordinance is not something to just kind of get going like that. You should really have something that's ready to go. The rate structure does need to be looked at to promote conservation, and there are ways to address the issue of the reduced amount of income. One thing you can do, and I mentioned this last month, is you can have a rate stabilization fund, which ensures that you have enough money to run the district, run the pumps, run the use the chemicals and all the things that you need to do in order to get the water out to the community. And then at the end of the year, you refund a website called aguanomics.com, A-G-U-A, nomics, by a water economist named David Zetland. He also wrote a book called The End of Abundance, where he addresses these issues of promoting conservation and making sure that you still are able to cover all of your bills, and how do you do those things from an economics angle more than anything else. But I really look forward to having this done right, because when I spoke to David Zetland when he was here in town a couple years ago, and I showed him the rate structure, he laughed. He said, "That's not it. That's not anything that's going to cause anybody to conserve. It's not a way that, and not a way that we can make sure that the people who use less, who are conscious and try to conserve as much as possible, are rewarded for doing that, because that doesn't exist right now. Thank you.
Thank you.
I had a comment. I'm sorry. I didn't put a slip in. Can I go up?
You've got to be quick.
Mahala Burton, I just have to say this. This isn't smoke and mirrors. The whole idea of the conservation program is to have more building. So it's the same amount of water with more houses. That was how this whole thing started. The intent to serve letters. You haven't forgotten about that, have you?
Not at all.
Okay.
Not
so,
at all.
So why are we pretending that there will be less pumping? It's the same amount of water, but a whole lot more houses. So when we do have that drought, and now we have no water, we better get lots of those emergency desal plants. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. They're getting mean out there now. Are we done with this? Do you have any comment?
Nothing to add. Is there any reason why we can't put this off a bit, or is this something that really needs to be dealt with today? Mrs. Bettenhausen, in her wisdom, is always very convincing. And
I think if we implement it today, you know, we're talking about we're talking about capturing the difference in points between 2.0 and 1.5. For an example, we feel comfortable that we've addressed the issue relating to our current points bank in this board. They've asked for, and the board's approved 22 meters. They're going to be asking for the Habitat from Humanity, their additional 2 meters, and they may even be asking for up to 40 meters. And so there's a lot of things on the horizon before we even talk about issuing that first connection that we want to do as part of President McKinnon's stimulus plan. So there's the grandfathered wait list that is going to require points, and there's the people self-help that's going to require points. So we look at it from an opportunity for the CCSD. We've purchased a lot of shower heads that are on their way for the hotels and things like that. So I know that's a long answer. Our thought was on this to be proactive regarding conservation. Bill Madouse will bring his water conservation plan to the board in January, and part of that plan represents significant changes to the municipal code, specifically relating to conservation within the municipal code. And so the 90-day process starts after that January adoption, so we're looking at February, March, April to be able to capture points, and we just wanted to be preemptive on that and get a couple month head start on it. So that's, again, it's a policy decision, but we're looking at it from a standpoint of being able to capture those points immediately with the 1.5 shower heads, which we've already ordered, by the way. So, but I can always send them back. So,
Director Robinette,
just a question. Because I have a tendency to wonder, too, about the need just right now, if we're going to be looking at other conservation recommendations soon. My question is, when you were referring to grandfathered projects or whatever that are in the pipeline, and are you having this in place before they go further, wouldn't it be under the umbrella of the 2010 building requirements for California? Isn't it that the design and when the architects work with these particular people, they're going to have everything that's in the current 2010 building code? And aren't we wanting to just bring our code up to date to that?
Correct.
Okay.
Correct.
Can I mention some that we're missing out on a lot of opportunities, particularly resales that occur even when you're not building anything, as well as certain remodels that occur. I think there was over 50 remodels to date this year alone. So there's a lot of opportunities that occur beyond just new construction that we were trying to to capture with this update as well. So
I don't get the sense that anyone is not in agreement that we want to make sure that our own municipal code is at least reflecting what the California Building Code says in 2010. But my question is, again, this coming back with maybe revising it again in the near future with what we may or may not use with the Madaus recommendations, I don't think that we're going to have that many closings on new home sales right now. We're still in a really tough spot. I don't think houses are selling that rapidly. And for the remodels that we might miss in the next 2 or 3 months, it would be pretty marginal, I would think.
Well, roughly, I was looking at data on home sales in Cambria in years past. It was about 50 homes per quarter, as I recall, somewhere in that 40 to 60 range per quarter. Mm-hmm. So that gives you kind of an idea of how many homes might occur in the next 3 months.
I'm just questioning it because I don't know of anyone that's had a house on the market for sale that's getting anywhere fast. Yeah. But I could be missing that.
Yeah. If I can add too, some of these measures that are in here will likely be similar to what Madaus Water Management is going to come up with. For example, I know the urinals, the 1/8 gallon per flush urinals, is something that I got from them and just conversing back and forth on different matters. So we have tried our best to make it as current as possible based on those discussions. But it's your pleasure as a board as whether you want to go forward or hold off. We again, it's at staff level, we thought we could capture quite a few more retrofits and points and get pretty aggressive with the water conservation program in the meantime. And then just if we had to correct something, we'd correct it later.
Director Robinette, what they're saying is that this is a way of garnering points that they're going to need for...
But it would be nice to see for all the other fixtures that would be required the bigger picture of how much that would translate into for water savings, not just focusing on just the one fixture. Be good to know.
And just one other comment, I'm sorry. I just want to support what Bob said. The overwhelming majority of these, if not all of them, will be the same recommendations that Bill Madaus will be bringing forward to you. So. We're excited about it. We're trying to, with the grandfathered both residential and commercial, not knowing how big those projects will be, like say Lamert and things like that. You're probably looking at somewhere to between a 4,000 to 6,000 needed points, if the board decides to say, okay, the policy is yes, we want to have all the points. For the projects that are grandfathered already, that's a policy decision. So, we look at it as a bank account between people's self help and things like that. We just want to be aggressive and have a conservation, bring some conservation efforts forward to you that you feel comfortable with.
So from that standpoint, it makes sense to me to approve rather than to push off. Because it is going to be their ability to garner points to begin to increase that points bank that you are going to need in order to satisfy some of the future demands.
Right. I think I would support it with some reluctance, but only because I don't want to cause any harm to some of the existing projects that such as the People's Health Self-Help Program and so forth. I think we need to do what we can to help expedite them with their project, and so I'm not going to. So I will support it on that basis.
Okay. With that, I need a motion. Accept it, right? Waive the reading.
We would need a motion to waive further reading and read by title only.
By title only.
And to facilitate that, let me read it by title only.
Okay.
And also, I'm going to make a slight change to the title just so it reads correctly. So, ordinance amending chapters 4.16 and 4.20 of the Cambria Community Service District CCSD code relating to Appendix 4.16A acceptable water savings, plumbing, and fixtures, and subsection 4.20.050 program stand. Introduce would be appropriate.
Okay, I would move that we waive further reading and introduce the ordinance by title only.
A second.
Those approve?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Most that part passes. Next one.
Want to try that one?
That's
okay.
You want to go ahead? Yeah. I would also then
introduce
the ordinance. Council, is that 4.20.050 the ordinance number?
The copy I have doesn't have an ordinance number on it.
I'm showing a 4.20.050.
No, okay. That's the code section. The ordinance number,
Over here.
The district clerk
is waiting for a number.
Is waiting for a number.
No, because it's got XX.
Is there an ordinance number for this? Okay.
We'll make it ordinance 5 or 6. I'm sorry, on the draft I've been asked to not put the number on, so I did not number it.
Okay, well, that's
for
fine.
The final reading.
So, what is it, 5 or 6?
This will be ordinance 6-2012.
Okay. So we're going to introduce.
Okay, I would then move that we introduce ordinance number 6-2012, amending the CCSD Municipal Code paragraphs. Appendix 4.16A, category numbers 2, 3, 4, 5, and 10, and 4.20.050A1 to revise the water efficiency standards for toilets, urinals, showerheads, faucets, commercial pre-rinse spray valves, clothes washers, and dishwashers.
Okay. A second.
Thank you, President McKinnon, and board members, including Director Berenger.
There he is.
The term of the special district seat currently held by LAFCO Commissioner Merle Cliff expires in December of 2012. Director Cliff was recently reelected to the Cambria Board of Directors. If no other candidate is nominated, Director Cliff would be reappointed as commissioner without a follow-up election. LAFCO Executive Officer is calling for nominations to be submitted in writing by December 10th of 2012. At the end of the nomination period, if more than one nomination is received, the Executive Officer shall prepare and deliver to each independent special district one ballot and voting instructions. Thank you.
I spoke to Merle Cliff before the meeting, and he is in favor of being nominated.
Is it time to make the nomination?
Sure.
I would like to make the nomination then that Director Cliff continue to be our representative with LAFCO.
Second.
Okay.
No, he seconded.
Directors, your pleasure. Those in favor say aye.
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 Motion approved. Wonderful. We're moving right along now. You want a break?
Just a
quick break. 5 minutes? 10 minutes? 7 minutes.
I need a break.
You need a break. It's been a tough meeting, huh? Thank you. We are on 9D. And if we really work hard, we can get out of here in the next couple hours. Okay, discussion and consideration to adopt Resolution 67-2012, authorizing amendments to the payment and compensation plan for Cambria Community Service District management and confidential employees, parenthesis MCE. General Manager.
Thank you, President McKinnon and board members. I'm really pleased to bring this to you today. Willingness on bargaining units to they understand that the economic situation in this country, at least in California, is different than it used to be. And so I want to thank the management staff, the management confidential and exempt, for their willingness to work with Bill Avery on this. With regard to the specifics, Monique Madrid is our administrative services officer. I can't be in negotiations. It's really not in the district's best interest. So the district had to designate a representative, and that was Monique. So Monique has been involved with the SEIU that we brought last month to you that you approved relating to health care benefits and two-tiered retirement. And this month we're bringing MCE to you. So with that, I'm going to turn this item over and the next two items actually over to Monique. She handles the overwhelming majority of our HR-related items, and she is with Bill Avery in every negotiations session. So thank you, Board.
Okay, thank you. As Jerry said, this is similar to what SEIU we brought forward last month, and there's a significant reduction in the second tier for health for retirement benefits. There's a reduction in the health care benefits, mainly to future hires who will retire with a health benefit at the PEMCA minimum, which is $112, which is another item and has more specifics further later on. Then we also have a reduction in the employer-paid member contributions for the district, where the employees are picking up. They'll pick up the whole 8% and 9% by the end of the contract. We have eliminated longevity pay for new hires. We've reduced the health care and dental insurance premiums for part-time employees. And we've provided a uniform allowance, which is has some very small increases. I think it's just the $50 in the boot allowance. And then we have some sick leave, so that we'll only pay out sick leave to folks who leave in good standing. And then we have a few reopeners, which will be to update the personnel policies, the payment compensation plan, and...
Not a question, just a comment. I think, and a lot of credit should go to you, Mr. President, for your strong sense of fiscal accountability when you took office 4 years ago. And I think these new agreements that bring the salaries and benefits in line with other governmental entities and or the private sector, I think this is very, very positive for the district as a whole. And I think a lot of it is, again, a credit to your efforts, which began 4 years ago.
Thank you. Bill Avery, I think, did an excellent job. And with Monique, that I think we've made some very important changes, and I think everyone wins. I do have one question that Bill Avery never did discuss, and it's a minor item. It's only for conversation almost. Uniform for field supervisors. Now, I can't see that. We never discussed it. The allowance of $250 annually, I never saw a uniform on a Jim Adams or whoever. What kind of uniforms Does the finance manager get a uniform?
Well, you don't see uniforms on them, and I think that's one of the things that I want to see on the field people and the supervisors out on the field is that they have uniforms and those are uniforms that are identifiable to the public, and they say CCSD on them, and they know that they're CCSD employees. And so this was kind of my give to the employees, because I think it's important that that our employees look professional. I know the fire department, you know, those guys and the ladies up there look professional and sharp all the time. I think our water personnel and our facilities and resources personnel, and I think our water personnel, when they're out in the public, their trucks should be clean and they should look nice and professional. We're in the process of working on those uniforms right now. And with the expectation that they'll be wearing them. And it's better than wearing their own clothes. So,
it is. Two questions, but one comment. Certainly, a person that's out in the field fixing the water leak or the sewer or whatever, they are the CCSD. As far as the customer is concerned, that is a total reflection on how good or how bad the CCSD is.
Appropriate.
Yeah, I've seen that.
I won't mention
or a local bar.
Yeah, I won't, yeah, a local bar. I think it's just, you know, raising the level of the professionalism within the organization and looking more professional. And we the board was gracious enough to buy them, you know, to purchase new vehicles, and now uniforms are next. And so we'll come back to you and show you what those, you know, you'll see the employees in the uniforms, and I think it's just good for the organization.
Excellent. Yeah.
But as a comment, though, $250 is really, this must be a shared expense. It must be an incentive for them to have uniforms that can't pay for them. Could it? Didn't you say $250?
$250, yeah. What's wrong with that?
If they're going to be washing them and everything else, I mean, that's the... You know, that's just got to be a shared expense between the employee. Okay. Must be thinking that, you know, thank you for helping me, but to maintain them and everything, it's going to cost them something, I would think. More than $250 in a year. Huh? That's just
maybe.
Okay. Good start.
You're moving right along.
How many uniforms did somebody do a little, like, cost analysis of what is that buying for them?
We got it in here.
Okay, well, the $250 is, by our estimation, is for the pants. Then there's a boot allowance. And then if you look below that on the exhibit, the green sheet exhibit, on the very last page, well, it's page 3, the district's going to provide 5 long-sleeve shirts, 5 short-sleeve shirts, 1 jacket, and hats as needed per each year. And so we did a rough estimate of the cost of that, and it's around $700.
Okay, thank you for the clarification.
You're welcome.
Do we need a motion?
Which? Go ahead. Go ahead. I don't have it here. I don't have the item in front of me here. What are we on, 9E?
D.
D.
90.
Okay.
I don't know.
I'll go.
Go ahead.
Okay. I would like to move that we adopt resolution 67-2012, authorizing amendments to the payment and compensation plan for the CCSD management and confidential employees.
I'd second it.
Not only the retirement benefits, the percentages, and having employees pick up more of that cost, that is happening statewide. And some of the agencies don't have health care insurance in retirement. But with that being said, we have, back from 1985, contracts that specifically say that employees retiring prior to such legislation shall have insurance coverage as currently provided. Now, I know you're looking at changing that, or it doesn't say what it says, is what Monique had referred to me, that doesn't really mean that. And out of the 32 retirees, it means we perceive it one way, and you're perceiving it somewhere else or a different way. You know, you're adopting this payment compensation plan, this government code section 22892, which is the bare minimum of that. And yet, if you go to the state, currently is using government code section 22893, and it has a breakdown. If you work 20 years or more, there's 100% of your employer pays the contribution for retirees. If you work 10 years, it's 50%. And I'm not saying that would be right or not, but the retirees, their position is that we had contracts that we retired under, and we want you to obligate to us on those contracts. And we stand pretty united. There's another letter that's come in from Robert Hamilton, who was the assistant city manager or utilities manager who retired in 2001. You have employees who have worked. There's a couple of employees that come to my mind that worked. Brian Bodie, 32 to 35 years. Bub Camozzi, who worked 30 to 35 years. And to pull this out from under them, I think, is a crying shame. I do see that you are going into a private session with your legal counsel for potential litigation. A brand new Mercedes in his garage. But when we litigate, nobody wins other than the attorneys. And I'm saying that out of respect for you. So anyway, I hope that we could, I just don't get where the unions can give away. We're not represented on this matter. When they've gotten raises, we haven't gotten raises. If they've had an increase in benefits, we haven't received that yet. Now, because it benefits the district, you're taking it away. 4 months ago, I believe it was, your CPA, Alan, gave a breakdown on the financial picture of the district, and he referred to Stockton, Mammoth Lakes, and San Bernardino because they went bankrupt. Cambria has over $400 million in reserves.
Four million.
I'm sorry.
I wish it was.
Yeah, me too. $4 million in reserves. So, I mean, you're not hurting, and there are concessions that have been given up. In 2004, I signed off on the 95-5 plan and recognized that. So, and I'm happy with that. I'm getting the, I'm paying, I take the PERS choice insurance, so I pay the difference. And that plan went up 16%, and I'll pick that up. But anyway, I just wanted to speak on behalf of the retirees. I didn't have anything prepared, so it probably wasn't real eloquent, but
yes,
I
was.
I made my point, so
you
thank
made
you.
Your point.
Thank
yeah.
you.
I think so. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
One more. We have Amanda Rice, director. Very quickly, Director Rice, exactly.
Thank you. Thank you, President McKinnon.
It's going to save a lot of walking for you.
I know, right? I'm going to have to walk my dogs more or something. Thank you. I'd just like to say one simple thing. Retirement benefits is pay that's delayed for work already done. These folks worked expecting this was what they were going to get. The policymakers at the time gave them the contract.
Of member contributions to the California Public Employees Retirement System for Management and Confidential Employees. General Manager.
Thank you, President McKinnon and board members. This is the second part of what we're going to be discussing today. And with that, I'll turn it over to Monique Madrid, our Administrative Services Officer.
Thank you. Yes, this is the employer-paid members' contribution that was mentioned before. AMPERS requires that we pass a resolution and provide with them what the district will be obligated to pay, which at the end of this contract will be zero for both miscellaneous and the safety member of this group. So I'd be happy to answer any questions.
I don't see any questions.
I move that we adopt resolution 68.-2012 authorizing reporting the payment of member contributions to the California Public Employees Retirement System, CalPERS, for CCSD management and confidential employees.
I second.
Those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carried. 9F, discussion and consideration to adopt 66-2012, electing to be subject to public employee medical and hospital care act only with respect to members of a specific employee organization and fixing the employer's contribution at an amount at or greater than that prescribed by Section 22892, parenthesis B, of the Government Code. Is this Monique?
Go ahead.
Okay, thank you. Yes, this is another PERS requirement, and we need to pass this resolution to allow the future hires to receive the $112 into retirement because we are under the equality clause, and so what active employees get, so do retirees. So we're changing the benefit slightly to allow us to enact this provision. So I did provide us a scenario of what the cost savings to the district is by making this change on the sheet, which is
4679.
The savings will be $4,679.16 for an individual plan.
Public Employees Medical and Hospital Care Act only with respect to members of a specific employee organization and fixing the employer's contribution at an amount at or greater than that prescribed by Section 22892B of the Government Code.
Second. Discussion, Mr. Haddon?
I forgot one item. Quick question. Mr. Behringer, or Jim, last month's meeting, you stated that you'd be happy to meet with the retirees or have an agenda item that we could discuss. And Mike had concurred with that, and I think Gail did too. My question is how do I get to meet with Jerry or who the board or have that on the agenda? What's the proper procedure to follow?
Well, I think my comment was that I'd be open to revisiting the issue, that it did not necessarily relate to the action we were taking with respect to the contracts with the current employees, but that I personally would be open to revisiting the issue after after this we get through the contract with the three bargaining groups.
Okay. So what for me, how do I proceed with that?
I think basically if you come and remind us that that's what we said, we'll instruct the attorney, general manager to have some additional discussion on that after we get done, like I said, with the current agreements.
Thank you.
And by the way, I agree with that, and you can call me anytime and we can get together. But the board president sets the agenda for the following meeting.
Yeah.
And so that would be a way to get around, possibly contact Jerry Gruber, Mr. Gruber, and then move forward.
Thank you.
Thank you. We have a motion and a second. Those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Finally, 9G, consideration to adopt Resolution 65-2012, rescinding Resolution 13-2009 regarding instituting an immediate hiring freeze and approval of unfilled budgeted staff positions. This would be you, right, gentlemen?
If I wanted to modify a position or create a position or add a position, I would still have to come back to the board and ask them to approve that. It just, from a housekeeping standpoint, it makes it simpler. I think when this was adopted, March of 2009, establishing a hire freeze at that time, this was an action was based on the determination that the CCSD was experiencing significant financial issues, both as it related to financial needs at the time that were required to provide existing levels of service to the community, and also based on the national recession and the impacts on the state of California and the county of San Luis Obispo. I think that this does not give me liberty to not be fiscally prudent with the Cambrians' money, and I'll continue to do that. It just allows me, if somebody leaves the organization or retires or there's an opening and that position is budgeted within the fiscal year, that it allows me to go forward with the recruitment process and make the necessary arrangements or adjustments to hire and fill that position. So it allows me to a little more latitude than was previously given to the general manager.
Fine. Thoughts?
Oh, I have a question of counsel. I know Mr. the general manager wants to be fiscally prudent, and he probably only has authorization for contracts over $25,000, up to $25,000, purely discretionary. But does the budget lock him into a certain number of employees? I mean, he has to maybe stay within the budget, but could he have 100 employees if he stays within the budget, or 5 employees if he stays within the budget?
I've always understood the process to be that the positions have to be budgeted. If the general manager wanted to add an additional position, he would come back to the board to seek approval.
Okay.
Sure. No further discussion. We need a motion.
Just I think it's an entirely appropriate action to take. I think in years past, when there were major budget issues and the need to do some trimming, if you would, and it was really important that the board took that action. But I think now we're to the point where the general manager should be given the authority to fill the positions that have been previously approved as part of the budget, and not have to
change quite a bit. Along with this, back in this resolution was made in 2009. The board also voluntarily took a cut in compensation, and maybe that can be addressed at a future date. Also, it's a thought.
Okay, I'd like to move that we adopt Resolution 652012, rescinding Resolution 132009, establishing a hiring freeze.
Second.
I'll second.
Those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carried. With no benefit in suggesting for the future discussion or agenda item, I would think it would be very appropriate to go back to the historical $100 a meeting compensation for the directors. It's been, I guess, for a decade, that number, and it's less than the POMO, and it's less than several other places of similar situations, special districts, and I think it'd be reasonable to do. But for future agenda item,
I'll make sure that's on the December agenda. And I didn't realize that as part of this, that was.
Yeah, it was done. Right. Yeah, it was done right. For a show of support for the contraction that we did have, as the director spoke to. With that, we are ready to adjourn to closed session. Thank you very much. Oh, you have something?
Just one comment. And regarding my manager's report, I use the terminology executive committee. And just as a point of clarification, I apologize. That's not accurate. The executive committee doesn't exist anymore. It should have read, with regarding the lobbyists, it should have read president and vice president. So I didn't want to give anybody the
the impression that there's this executive committee that doesn't even exist anymore.
It sounded good, though.
It did, didn't it? It sounded
just brilliant.
But
it.
That was my fault, and I just view you guys as the executives. But there is no executive committee, and future general managers' reports will reference the president and vice presidents. My apologies.
Over at the old place, you know. Thank God.